This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, I'm Kellyanne Taylor, and this is the Radio Times podcast. Every week, I sit down with a celebrity guest from the world of TV or film to talk about their lives, both on and off screen. To my fellow TV enthusiasts, I hope you enjoy listening. In this week's episode, I am joined by TV chefs Cy King and Dave Myers, aka the Hairy Bikers. Dave was born and raised in Borough and Furness and Cy in Kibblesworth, County Durham, and both brought up in working-class families. They met on the TV set of Catherine Cookson's The Gambling Man. Cy was the second assistant director and Dave, head of makeup. It was their united love of motorbikes and good grub that helped launch the Hairy Bikers, but it's not always been an easy ride. In this episode, we discuss low ratings and the Christmas special intended to be their swan song, Dave's ongoing battle with cancer, and why Christmas means so much to them this year.
Hello, and welcome to the Radio Times podcast. What is the view from your sofa at home? Talk me through your living room setup.
I look forward past the TV, which is in front of the sofa, and over onto the gardens. And there's like a cedar of Lebanon and geese come in there. I collect a lot of porcelain and pots. So I've got china cabinets. Very old school, very old fashioned sitting room. Very tranquil place. Very yellow, actually.
Is it?
Yeah, like yellow.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
it is,
the yeah. Walls. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, old school.
And kind of similar. I have the windows look out across the garden. I have an open fire that is constantly on because it feels when it isn't, the house isn't living, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So I have there's a big log basket. There's a slightly damp, smelly dog.
I wish you wouldn't talk about me like that.
Yeah, sorry, dude, sorry. Then there's a bookcase and then there's my music and a turntable because I like LPs and the drinks cabinet, which is never close. Never too far.
Yeah, I've got a rocking horse.
Yeah, yeah, yes,
I forgot to mention that. The other window at the sitting room, it was there when we bought the house. It's a big rocking horse. And so we thought.
In fact, I've seen you on it.
Yeah, I thought, oh, it's adult size.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it should stay, really. So
yeah, you can't get rid of things like that.
No, it's called Marmaduke.
Better when you're on it because you get closer. It's great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Riding through the home.
In a one horse open sleigh. Off we go.
Anyway, sorry.
This has already gone slightly unhinged, which I thought it might do, because you guys are something
unhinged.
Of a hoot. Yes. when you're watching telly, what do you enjoy watching?
Well,
come on, be honest. What are you watching at the moment? Now, be honest.
Well, I'm watching Newcastle United at the minute, obviously, because they're brilliant. Well, not a great
they weren't last night.
Yeah, no, they weren't last night, but let's just gloss over that, shall we? And I've just finished. I watched a film called The Burial, which I thoroughly enjoyed. It was brilliant. It's an Amazon original. It's great. Yeah, that was good.
To be a bit, the cleverer one, I've been watching Lupin or Lupin on Netflix.
Yes.
I love it. I love him. He's the lead actor is amazing.
Yeah, but, Omar Sy and Say.
Yes, yeah, it's incredible. I'm going to mourn the loss of that when it finishes. But we go to Guilty Place, Bangers and Cash on yesterday. It's set in, you know, Thornley Dale.
There you go.
It's I'm a bit of a petrol head, but it's the, you know, the selling cars, obviously antique cars, vintage cars, vehicles, motorbikes. And I find it quite addictive because you have the story of these old cars and old men, inevitably, some old women. And you've got to stay to the end to find out what they get.
See, it's genius.
It is. Bangers and Cash.
Yeah, that's very interesting viewing. But like you say, I mean, those classics, I mean, that's been going on for I don't know how many series. And so there's a formula there that people enjoy.
But I've just discovered it, you see. So all the back catalogue. But it's one of those things where my wife does, she walks into the room. If I'm sitting there, she will do a U-turn.
If you guys watch TV together, who would get control of the remote?
Oh, dear, because he's got a gigantuan knowledge of what's on.
Well, not really. We tend to. I think last thing we watched together was that film Dunkirk, wasn't it?
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, it tends to be a film. Yeah. Or on again on Netflix was the biopic of Motley Crue.
Oh, that was hilarious.
That was really filthy, but that appealed to us greatly. Actually, yeah.
Your faces have lit up talking about that, and you look like
it was
two
ghastly.
Naughty schoolboys.
I think we watched it twice.
Just in case we could pick up any tips.
Yeah, let's get a bottle of bourbon out. Hey.
A bottle of bourbon out and be slightly... Yeah.
Well, live the life we thought we could have had.
Should have had.
Maybe should
possibly have had.
What's your snack and drink of choice whilst watching telly?
Oh, beer and pizza. Yeah, I know, I'm being honest. I could say something like, oh, it's lovely, I just take a salad with endive. Yeah, and endive. And a little olive. It's not really. It's beer and pizza.
Do you know what I really like? I really like, there's a great curry house not too far away. And I love a takeaway I still live in the Northeast, so I'm driving all the time. And, when you come home and you really can't, you just want to eat something. And it's such a great curry. It's really light Southern cuisine. And you sit there, you sit there with a great tandoor and a bit of roti and just watch the telly. Oh, with a bottle of Singer. Ganon.
Heaven.
Yeah.
Right. The reason why I went to the pub last weekend for a roast, and I said to the girls that I went with, I said, you never guess who I've got on the podcast next week. And they a few suggestions, and I said, no, guys, you're really off the mark. It's the Hairy Bikers. And I have never seen such excitement because me and my girls, we love food. Food for us is our joy. It's how we share love. You know, we got a roast and then we got extra pigs and blankets. We've got extra stuffing. We've got cauliflower cheese.
We got extra pigs in blankets.
We did, yeah.
Honestly, we were having having supper the other night in a hotel of pigs in blankets. And we the same as you. We got an extra pot of pigs in blankets.
That's great.
There's never enough. They're so stingy with them. And when you're eating out, that's always my motto. If you're eating at home, you can make better choices. But if you're eating out, whatever you want goes.
Yeah, absolutely. You might as well.
I want to talk about how food has kind of brought you together. It was in 1992 that your meet cute was on the TV set of a drama called The Gambling Man. Can you tell me about the moment you met and how the Hairy Bikers came to be?
Well, we met in a place called the Egypt Cottage, which was right next door to Tang T's television, because we were shooting a series of the Catherine Cookson dramas in the Northeast and Northumberland. And because Dave and I's roles were really pretty much entwined, I was the second assistant director and Dave was the chief makeup artist and hair and prosthetics. You do the call sheet together. You know, I'll go, how long do you need for a male actor with a beard? How do you know, Dave will go, I need that long, I need that long, I need that long. Because it was a period drama, obviously. So we got the work done pretty quick, and I want you, which we had a curry together, basically.
Yeah.
We had a chicken curry, and several poppadoms and several pints of beer, because those were the days when you just had a drink at lunchtime. It was kind of fine.
Yeah.
And that was it, really. And that's how we met.
For both of you separately, how did you fall into the world of television? And had that been kind of career aspirations for you?
No, I was at art school for 5 years, and I'd got a postgraduate. I'd trained as a fine artist at Goldsmiths, and then I did a postgraduate diploma in art history, and then I kind of run out of grants. And I was working as a car park attendant in Victoria, and I saw an advert in the Guardian Creative and Media page for trainee makeup artist at the BBC.
Oh, wow.
That sounds interesting. I had fine art. So I'd only ever watched like the Munsters, and I'd seen these names from Hollywood come up. And I applied, and it was 3,000 applied, and they took 9 on. And I got one of the positions. I can remember on the day I went for my interview, and I knew nothing about makeup at all. And I remember speaking to somebody, and I'd kind of, the tests that they were, because I knew nothing, I just went for it. And I think they thought I was just really clever. But in fact, I was just really ignorant. And it was like a double bluff. Anyway, they took taking me over to the second part of the interview. And I said to this lady, Lisa, she was called, I got to know her later on. And I said, what's it like here? Oh, it's all right. She said, I'm just off on the Canberra in the West, in the Caribbean for 6 weeks with the two Ronnies. And I thought, hey, up, this doesn't sound such a bad gig. Mm. And anyway, I got the job, and that's how I got into telly. And the first thing I ever worked on, you know, when you start, I was just helping out with a band of aliens on holiday on Blake 7. And so that was it, really. That's how I started.
Wow, goodness. And what about you, Si? How did you get into it?
Well, I was a musician initially, and then a job in musician, and I was working at a place called Spectro Studios in Bells Court, Newcastle, playing drums. And I was also heavily involved with an unemployment centre called You Can Do It up in the northeast. And we'd bring the kids in and all that. And there was a big notice board, and on the notice board it said student film. So I had a look at this student film, and I realised that it was a friend of my sister's who was actually making this student film. So I went and did that and drove the minibus, basically. And then when I got to Northeast Media Training Centre, on the notice board, there was this advertisement for runners for the pilot of a children's drama series. So I went and had an interview. I just kind of blagged it, really. Didn't have a clue what I was talking about, but I'd obviously worked with a load of kids. And so volunteered at this unemployment centre, and I was a musician and all that sort of stuff. So that all stood me in good stead. And it was the pilot for the very, very first Biker Grove, up in Newcastle. So that was it, really. And then I went from runner, and I remember the producer, Matthew Robinson, saying, what job do you want when we come to do the real series? And I said, oh, I want his job. And his job was the first assistant director and senior floor manager. And I was just thinking, yeah, I can do that. Little did I know the background stuff that you had to do to actually get it to that point. So I think I didn't sleep for about 6 months, just working out children's hours as a, you know, and a contract. It was an absolute flaming nightmare, but it was, it was kind of sink or swim. So, and I swam, and that was my career for years.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I think both of you have this, I mean, you're very warm. I think that's what makes the two of you so successful and why people come back to watch your shows time and time again. But you also seem to have a little bit gift of the gab, which has landed you in some amazing situations that have kind of changed your life almost, just from sweet talking your way in almost.
Well, I think you can sweet talk your way into a point, yeah. But then you've got to deliver.
And you're hard workers. I get that impression.
And we graft.
Well, I think it's never turn down opportunities. A lot of people will hesitate and think, nah, nah. I mean, our great motto is always, oh, give it a go. You never know. It's like with the bikers, we had the idea to do it. We wrote to 6 producers. We give it a go. And actually, that little thread started again that took us off to where we are now.
And I think also as well, you know, there is also a skill. There is definitely a skill set in recognizing an opportunity and working your way to find out a little bit about it, because then you can make an informed decision about whether you do or whether you don't. Because if you close the door on it straight away, you're not going to do it. You know, there is that. And it's a skill, you know, it's a skill that I think not that many parents pass on to their children.
Yeah. A lot of people now say no before they think about it.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
You know, and a lot of young people, I think, because it's harder for the youngsters these days.
God, yes.
It's much harder.
Yeah.
And I think they haven't got that confidence of taking a risk because there's not that many opportunities.
Yeah.
But I suppose we grew up with the fact there was always something you could do. So it certainly was easy, I think, because I'm 10 years older than Si. But even within that 10 years, it was easy. I came out of uni.
Definitely.
And even as a car park attendant, it was only temporary. There'd be something else. You know, I had that confidence. There was always stuff.
It feels like that nowadays there's a real fear of losing what you have, you know, because of cost of living crisis and things like that. It's becoming so difficult to even stay afloat that you think, I guess sometimes people are putting their hopes and dreams on hold because they will just take the stability instead.
Yeah.
And I think that's the sad, damning indictment of the modern world that we live in the West, is that actually to put hopes, dreams and aspirations on hold because you're just getting by, and it's absolutely awful. It's an awful thing, because actually what you're doing is taking away a little bit of hope. And that's awful. That's awful.
Isn't it funny? You can imagine, like, you say somebody in the 50s, they've got stability, there'd be mortgages, families, and you think, yes, just hang on to that. It's all going well, just hang on to it. But if you're in your 20s, you should be able to wing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
So many people haven't got any fallback, though, have they?
No, the problem. And that's the sad thing, yeah.
And that's it. And, I mean, the world that we're living in is just becoming increasingly more difficult to take risk or financial risk because... But then also, perhaps we're just getting harder on ourselves than maybe with the introduction of social media, everyone feels that they have to be at a certain point by a certain age. And if, for some reason, you're not there, that you haven't made it or that you failed or that you can't get success later in life.
I think that's probably very true. I think that's very true. I think that there are standards set that aren't attainable. And who is this? Who are they? Who is to say that? You don't have to be anything you don't want to be. Be yourself. Be who you are, and apply yourself with kindness and courtesy. And that's it. It's just that. Just do that.
Mind you, we had a dodgy moment with the BBC. We'd had 3 series of The Bikers had gone out. Mm. Been tootled around the world, 2 years' work. And then we went to the commissioner to discuss what we were doing next. And the first thing he said to us was, do you still have contacts in your day jobs? And we thought, this isn't going well. And in the end, he gave us one hour.
Yeah.
Like the Hairy Bikers Return Home. A winter special, which is meant to be our swan song. Like, thank you, it's been great, goodbye. Anyway, it doubled the ratings. So that was like, phew.
That showed that was, him.
Oh, the relief. But then there was a complete different can of beans, really. But I always remember that meeting. We sat outside in a car thinking, oh, well.
Yes, and a winter special, because we couldn't mention Christmas.
No, it booked a Christmas special.
That's right.
But then the BBC never had a slot to broadcast it. So he said, can you just make it a winter special? Like the same, but with no mention of Christmas.
We were like, the only downside to that is the final scene is Dave and I having a chat with my mum in what was sheltered accommodation in Birtley. So fundamentally, the nation thought that, and now the boys are home. So for years, we had to dispel the myth that actually Dave and I did not, here we weren't a gay couple living with my mother in sheltered accommodation in Birtley.
However, it was a ratings winner.
It was a huge success.
So, yes, God bless you, Stella King.
Come on, Stells.
Oh, can we go back to your childhoods and can you tell me what your first TV memory is?
Oh, Fireball XL5. Before you were imagination, Fireball XL5, Steve Zodiac, Venus Vesuvius, and Zuni the Lazoon. And it doesn't mean anything to you at all, does it? It's Gerry Anderson, pre-Stingray, pre-Thunderbirds.
You can still see the strings.
But it is after Supercar. That was Mike Mercury. But Fireball XL5, that did it for me.
Andy Pandy and Ted.
I think I got a reboot of Andy Pandy.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know what that means, reboot, but it just means something.
It came back.
Oh, thank you. Right. Yeah, we should just say that, Kelly.
I used to love Bill and Ben.
Yeah, Bill and Ben, the flower pot man.
Flubble.
I got those too.
And the Soup Dragons. Yeah, come on, man. I mean, the Clangers. How are you? I mean, if that wasn't an acid trip that was released on the psyche of children, I do not know.
I think that about some kids' programs. I think someone got high.
Well, imagine roundabout, you know, you're not telling me Dylan on his mushroom.
No. Come on, man.
No, but I remember even in the 60s with Bill and Ben, the Flubble, they were saying it was affecting children's speech, you know.
Never fiddled around. It's still any more problem,
didn't it? No, diddle bum.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
What were the view from your sofas like growing up? And I mean that in the sense of what were your homes like?
Small.
Small working class.
Yeah.
Northern family homes.
Would you ever have expected to be on telly?
Yeah, absolutely not. Are you mad?
No.
Of course not. No, Kelly.
Had ambitions above my station, though.
Well, yeah, you always...
Yeah, I do believe I was born in the wrong womb.
Yeah.
I mean, we had what we call a cottage suite in the 60s, which is like very small, two-seater sofa with foam rubber cushions, all gathered around a fire with a rack full of clothes drying above the fire, table squeezed in the corner, and a rediffusion television, just like a cabinet, you know, in front of us. Then a window looking out over the backyard. And seemed to be raining most of the time, being in the northwest. That was it, really. Pretty dreary.
I seem to remember this, you know, those little kind of mini cockpit freestanding cocktail bars?
You had a hostess trolley, you were posh.
But that was later on. But in Kibblesworth... I seen, and it was always like quite ornate. Maybe that's where my predilection for alcohol came from at an early age.
We had one bottle of sherry and that was it.
Advocaat, remember that? Warnick's Advocaat.
Warnick's Advocaat. I bought some last Christmas, actually.
I like it, man.
Yeah, I liked it too.
Our eggnog recipe's way better.
Yeah, I know, but my wife went mad for... It's not in her culture, Advocaat.
Well, it's not in anybody's culture, is it?
It is the Dutch.
It is. I mean, I know it's the Dutch, but and it's very lovely.
Yeah, but in Holland, it's thick, you eat with a spoon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's different.
I mean, can you imagine a pudding that gets you wrecked? Be nice.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind that. I'm not a big pudding fan, but I would say the thing that's taken my fancy in your very delightful book that I got sent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Beautiful book is the pecan tart.
Yes.
And I don't even have to bake because I hate baking because it hurts my arms.
Hurts your arms?
Well, you're doing it wrong.
Well, you're doing it wrong. Why does it hurt your arms?
Oh, mixing.
Mixing.
Get a mixer.
Get a mixer. Beat that.
Guys.
OK. Kellyanne, that's so lazy.
That's a recipe for disaster. Whereas
what, you and a mixer?
Me and a mixer. It's going to go everywhere. I had a blender. I was making a soup. I'm a very good cook. I'm an average cook, but I have a lot of passion for food, so I think that makes me a little bit better than average.
Yeah, it does.
A blender definitely went everywhere. I don't know what I'd done. So
you didn't put the lid on. It's really simple.
Well, I remember when we did Mums Know Best. Do you remember the lady with the Kenwood chef, you know, the big mixers? And she was forbidden from using it. She was great lady. She was great food.
Yes.
Do you remember in Scotland?
In Scotland, yes.
And her family came home and she was there with her head like locked down. Her hair had caught in the mixer. So she was like that. And they had to cut her hair off to get her out, the Kenwood chef.
Not a fabrication.
No, we haven't met that.
Absolutely true.
Right. If there's anything that's knocked on the nail of the head that I'll be getting a mixer, it's that. I've got incredibly long hair. Imagine.
You don't know.
Dangerous.
Don't want to be going anywhere near a mixer, Kellyanne. Good Lord.
No.
Okay, can we talk about how the show or how the Hairy Bikers got off the ground? Because you said that there were maybe 3 years where the idea was kind of in your brain, it was marinating, but it took a while to get off the ground and you received some kind of resistance. What was the resistance?
No, what happened was I was doing a film in Toronto with
Christopher Lambert,
mm-hmm. Lou Diamond Phillips, and it was a feature film, Kelly Brook, and emails had just started, and Si emailed me. I think you had some time off. You were between the Potters.
Yeah, I just finished the Harry Potter films.
And to make our own programmes. And then we just started, all right. And I had time because I was keeping Christopher Lambert's hours with the unions, which is Scoosh, you know. And so it kind of, you know, if you're going to write a book, write about what you know. Now I was just write food, cooking, eating, riding motorbikes and talking to people. And so we kind of wrote it up. And the first title, which wasn't very inventive, was Motorcycles, Food and the Search for Nirvana. So we sent this treatment to six producers. But we did that thing where we put a crane on the envelope. So we kind of trademarked it.
Still got that.
We still got that. We, you know, you post one to yourself. So if anybody tries to rip you off, you've got the proof that the idea was yours. I'd advise anybody to do that. And there were six producers. Nobody said it was rubbish. There's a lovely man called John Stroud. Took it up, had a meeting with him, and then with his colleague that was at university with, Vikram Jayanti. Now, John had won, like, comedy awards for Golden Rose and Montrose. He directed Spit and Image when he was a young man.
Wow.
And loads of stuff. But his friend, Vikram Jayanti, he got the Oscar for When They Were Kings, a documentary about Muhammad Ali. So he's quite heavyweight in the factual world. And the two of them just thought, took us on as like a project, would it be fair to say?
Yeah, special people.
special people. And we made a little pilot film, and that kicked around for a few years until Rolly Keating became controller of Channel 2, BBC Two, who also happened to have been at university with John and Vikram.
You've got to love Small the old school world. Thai network.
Yes.
Yeah.
So although it wasn't our old school Thai network,
well, we
it was
didn't
theirs.
Have a skit, you know, we it was didn't a have comp.
So that was it. We were Rowley's first commission at BBC Two. But we did have incredibly talented producers who would, you know, they could get anything commissioned on trust, really. And that was it. So started in 2000, we turned over in 2004.
If you've been behind the screens and you're then on camera, were you very aware of perhaps how people had behaved in the past and not to kind of mirror some of the maybe more dramatic behaviours?
The thing is that Dave and I, we know what crews go through because we were crew. And we know the hours they keep, we know the dedication, we know the skill set, we know their application. And you know, we're incredibly loyal to the crews that we work with. You know, as Dave was saying before, we've worked with, it's like 18 years of that that we've been together. Because, and there's some occasions that we've insisted that we want the same DOP, we want the same director, the director who shoots it, cuts it, and all of that. So, and there's no, just because you're in front of the telly and then you have you're in front of the lens and you have a profile doesn't give you the right to be anybody else other than who you actually are. Mm. So, you know, there's no diva behaviors. There's no nonsense. There's no, well, I insist on this and I insist on that. You have to, on occasion, you have to put your foot down a little bit, but not with the crews. It's not with the crews.
You know, you put your foot down with the people that you should put your foot down, which is the producers, which is fine. You know, the people who have, you know, the, but one thing that I know irritated me when I was crew, it was different. We were in drama, so it's a much bigger scale of operation. Yeah. It's the way people refer to crew by their job title.
Rather than names.
Oh. But like, if there's 8 or 10 of you on the road, it's awfully easy to learn people's names, especially on the road for 3 months. You know, you don't refer to somebody as Soundy or whatever. It's just blooming rude.
That's not. No,
it's not. And there's several who do.
Yeah, well, I think it is a little bit the industry. And I think also sometimes it can be the people around them.
Well, you're always going to get sycophantic behaviour around people that are successful or that have a profile. But the fact remains that there is common decency and there is politeness and there is kindness. And that is, those are the tenements. Now, if you forget those because you happen to be egocentric and off your chump with success, then it's not on, really.
No.
It's just not on.
And we've just finished a series will be shot this year. And, you know, I'm still going through treatment. I'm doing very well. Yeah. So everybody's had to make a lot of compromises to suit me. But like on set, had it not been through the friendship and not loyalty, that's the wrong word, just friendship and caring, I couldn't have got through it. You know, like, the runners, again, the runners just, I hate saying that word, but that is a job in our industry.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a standing job, But the lads and lasses are just come give me a chair. So if it's 5 minutes setting up so I can just sit down. Stuff like that meant so much. And I really was terribly grateful. And I tried to show me gratitude. But within that, you know, we had a really strong bond, didn't we? And say I've just come to do the Christmas special, finished that last Sunday.
Yeah.
And it was really sad saying goodbye to the crew. Really sad.
I love a Christmas special, and you guys will be returning to our screens. But as part of this, or your Christmas special will be framed around a Christmas party that you're throwing to thank many doctors and nurses, physios, friends and family that have helped you, Dave, with your cancer battle over the last 18 months. Yeah. What was that like to film?
I think the filming itself, that was quite emotional, wasn't it, Kingy?
Yeah.
It wasn't kind of like Hearts and Flowers. We always want to be celebratory. A celebration of the fact that 18 months on since diagnosis, I'm still here. You know, and I've done a series with my best mate, back on the bikes, done a couple of books with him. We've had a bloody good time. But behind that, you know, at the time, I'm not one of these to go on about it, but there was time maybe to open up a little bit, so that the actual meeting the people was quite emotional. And, you know, the suppliers of food, it's not just all about the hospital. There's Akhtar Islam, Michelin-starred chef, who is a friend of ours for years. But Akhtar was the first one to take me into his restaurant for a posh meal when I started to get an appetite back. And Akhtar, you know, the thing like that. But actually the filming of the party or banquet, there was 23 there, plus the crew, and all the deckies are open. And I honestly thought this is going to be really hard. I don't know how I'm going to keep it together. But the fact is, it was funny. There were no tears there. It was one of those things. Everybody was having such a good time. The food was amazing. You know, the food was superb. Suppliers, Akhtar had chipped in with the cooking. And it turned out to be a complete round-the-table party where people, I think, forgot that it was filming. It was so Christmassy and joyous. You know, and that we know we've got something quite special because it's really honest. But by God, it was a good dinner. And actually, I've got to admit, when we're eating that main course, I forgot we were filming too. It's like, Jesus, this is good, you know. It was magical. I think we've got the spirit of Christmas there. I really do.
Yeah, because I think Christmas, you know, it's very special. There is still to this day this real gratitude around Christmas, and it is a time to reset, to come together with family, to express love, and also to kind of look back over the last year and think about how far you've come. And I guess this Christmas especially is going to be particularly special because
you know, you're doing so much better for both of you. You know, Sai, it couldn't have been easy for you either. You know, it must have been difficult.
Well, yeah, of course it is, because, you know, you're seeing somebody you love in not a great place. But the thing is, it's not about me. It's about Dave and Lil and his family. You know, we were just talking earlier about trying to find the role for you as his best mate, just trying to find your role in that to kind of help them. It's not. Yeah, of course it's not easy, because, you know, we love each other to death. But that was the hard bit, just trying to find out what to do and again, not for you, but for them. You know, how I'm here, there's a spare pair of hands, tell me what you want me to do. And mm-hmm. But then also, even in that statement, you're very conscious that it's another pressure on them, that they're going, oh, God, well, what we did. So you just have to be, yeah. No, look, it wasn't easy, but it doesn't matter. It's not about me. It's about
Dave and
his family.
Back on the road filming. I say it wasn't easy.
No,
but there was certain. It was great. That's our norm. Sounds daft. Yeah. And
well, it's in our DNA, and particularly in Dave's DNA. Riding a motorcycle is what we do. It's like it's what we do. It's weird.
Yeah. How did you first get into riding bikes?
For Dave and I, it's kind of similar but different in the sense that my Auntie Hilda and my Uncle George used to live on a crossroads. These crossroads were absolutely notorious for accidents. My Auntie Hilda always had sheets cut up for bandages, because she'd always go out and help until the ambulance got there, and she'd patch lads up. But there was always, you know, motorcycles in the back that had been in an accident. So my Uncle George, and they were there for ages. So my Uncle George, being my Uncle George and very handy, he'd kind of daffy them up, and I'd just ride them up and down the back lane. And he'd go, and my Auntie Hilda used to go mad with my Uncle George, going, well, what if he falls off? He's going to split his head open.
I've never ridden one myself, but I've been on the back of two, and they are such core memories for me. The first, I was quite young, maybe about 15, 16, and I went on the back of my uncle's, and he took me so fast, and we were like really leaning into it, and it was incredible. And then the second time was more recently. I don't know what came over me, but my mum always said that she wanted to be, if in another life she was a biker chick that just went into the sunset, and maybe it was something about that. And I got on, I was walking up this big hill in Greece, and this guy just stopped, and he said, would you like a lift to the top? And I looked at the hill and I thought, yes, I would. So I got on the back of this stranger's bike, you know, viewer discretion, don't try this at home. And we drove along this coastal hill, and he dropped me off in the town, and it was the most beautiful view over the sea. And my hair was going, and it was like freedom, even though I wasn't the one riding. And he dropped me off, and I thought that was a lovely 15 minutes, and on with my day. And I will, 15 minutes, and I won't forget it.
Hey. Yeah.
See, that's what they do. That's what they do. And that, what a lovely little random act of kindness. How nice is that? Lovely.
And, you know, I know we're kind of conditioned to think that perhaps people won't always be kind, but, I mean, I think he was just
Being kind, that's a long walk. Poor girl, poor woman. Let's get her on the back.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the book? It's the kind of cookbook that I could see myself working through recipe by recipe, day by day, because it is just filled with delicious foods, especially as it's coming to winter. That's going to make you feel better. What was it like writing this book, and what are your favourite recipes from it?
It was interesting writing it, because the ideas came thick and fast. When you're doing a book, you need to come up with at least 200 ideas. And that whittled down to ones for development. Some get lost, some get go ahead. Yeah. It was wonderful. We did a TV series, Hairy Bikers Comfort Food, almost a decade ago, and it did well. And it's part of, we always like food to be comforting and joyous. And I don't know, it's just lots of ideas from all around the world. You know, we talk to a lot of people, ask what their comfort food, people from different cultures. I mean, things like, you know, if a lot of Asian comfort food is noodles. So there's a Filipino noodle dish in there that really is comfy. And things like, you know, you see about the pecan cake. Another friend of ours, an Irish lady, and she kind of had this Irish coffee cheesecake. Oh. So we worked up a recipe for that. Oh, that's really, You know, that's not a healthy one, but by golly, it's good. Think of the Irish, we got the Irish whiskey, the coffee, the biscuits, the cream. It works.
Yum.
But yeah, exactly. That's how the book kind of grew.
Yeah.
It grows like Topsy, and then some other people pitch in with stuff. And, you know, even like a salad, like a hearty salad, you know, that would be like my wife's idea of comfort food. Yeah. You know, like a Buddha bowl to my, it's my idea of hell, really. You know, you get halfway down, you know, it's going to be the same. But she loves it, you know.
Yeah.
So we have tried, and our tastes are different as well. Mm. So it's quite often the stuff that Si would love, and I, you know, I'm not keen on. But it's in the book.
Yeah.
So it's a good mix.
And that's really why we've called it Ultimate, for want of a better word, really, in the sense that it is an eclectic mix of cultural comfort foods, but cultures that we have a personal knowledge of, whether that be through our travels or through our friendships or through our acquaintances, through conversations. So it's a collection of that. It's a bit of a special book, this, because as you say, as you flick through the recipes, there's nothing that you don't want to cook.
But when I was a kid, yeah, it's a lot from childhood as well. But things like, with a twist, things like the Glamorgan sausage rolls. Now, Glamorgan sausages are a vegetarian sausage.
Oh, wow.
It's cheese-based. It's one of the earliest recipes for a vegetarian sausage. And we cooked it in a programme. They really are very good.
Yum.
But I remember my dad would bring sausages back and a block of puff pastry. And he'd make homemade sausage rolls. So we thought, well, let's do that with the Glamorgan sausages as a vegetarian alternative. And, you know, if it like cheese as well in puff pastry works, doesn't it? Mm. But like the Glamorgan sausage roll in a hot sausage roll, it's vegetarian. It's really comfy.
Yeah.
But that's how recipes grow. Things like the risotto carbonara, spaghetti carbonara. Everybody loves it.
I mean, we'll never get back into it.
We'll never get back. The Italians are going to hate us.
I was going to say that. They don't like their food to be touched.
A risotto's lovely. Combine the two. And actually, the recipe is really simple. But for a midweek supper dish, and I did do it, you know, a week or two ago, and it's so good.
Yeah.
It really works. It's very Moorish and, you know, things like that's how the recipes come about.
But some of these recipes have also been inspired by some of the staff. Weren't they? The Filipino noodles.
Yeah, and Monica, the Spanish nurse, the arroz al horno. We always say, like, the paella. It's always a thing. Whenever you do a paella or a paella on the telly, it's like, you know, it opens a can of worms. But the truth is that a real paella depends on what is available in the valley you live. It's like we filmed out in Spain, and the paella there, it was rabbit and cherry. So,
wow.
That was it. But the arroz al horno, it's like a one-pot wonder paella with chorizo, black pudding, chickpeas. You can put belly pork in it if you want. But everything goes into the rice. It's really tasty. And that came from one of the nurses. All over the ideas that the pans sit from the Filipino nurses. Because when I go in for chemo, they talk about food.
Yeah.
And we get
that
cracking on.
That can't be easy because it affects your appetite, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I admit the Irish coffee cheesecake was a bit of a stretch, really, with chemo. But never said that it worked. I got it down me.
And that's that's calorie dense, so that's probably important.
Need that.
As well. Yeah,
yeah, very good. Yeah, yeah. Even that's a good one.
Yeah. Oh, I was just looking through cheese toasties with andouille.
I know. How strange. Look, I wrote down the ones that I'm going to go and get the recipes for.
Good.
And fried chicken, andouille pasta, curry.
Oh, that's
beef
great.
Pasties.
The little linguine. Oh, man. Really
that looks
good.
Insane. Lamb and caper pie. Did not see that as a combo. Salmon en croûte.
Well, lamb and capers is a very old-fashioned. We used to, you know, an old English dish is a mutton and caper pudding. Is it like a real old English dish with suet pudding? But we thought we'll just take that to lamb and caper pie.
Oh,
same flavour profile, but you put it in a pie. The prawn and fish balls are good. Because scampi, that's a comfy go-to. But langoustine, like scampi, are so expensive. We've kind of thought, nah, can't do that. Then we thought, there's always a cheap scampi. Well, monkfish. But even then, monkfish now is expensive. So we thought, I remember when I was a kid, we used to have cod balls You know, they were like frozen cod balls. So we'd done fish and prawn balls, which are a wonderful alternative to scampi. But, you know, lovely. A few chips, a bit of tartar sauce, our fish and prawn balls, happy days.
Delicious. Mm. I like that everything's cooked from scratch. I like at the end, there's also how to make different things like your own ketchup, your own tartar sauce.
Yeah.
Because it does taste so much better when it's homemade.
It does. You know, and the thing is that once you get into the MO of it, it's pretty quick to do. You know what I mean?
So and you can have it in your fridge or whatever, and then it's just
keeps
there,
for ages. Or you can freeze it. Freezes perfectly well.
Just to finish off, could you tell me what you're going to be eating on Christmas Day, and if there are any festive traditions you're looking forward to?
Well, there's a we have two new additions. I have a new grandson. So
congratulations. So
thank you. My granddaughter is 3 and my grandson will be 4 months, 5 months by the time Christmas comes along. So, and that's the nice thing about new arrivals in the family, because then the traditions just slightly change to accommodate them. So you go, oh, I can remember when we did that last year. So it's an ever ongoing evolution, really. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing them over Christmas. So that's my thing. What am I eating? Well, we're going out, actually.
Yeah. I've never eaten out on Christmas Day.
Not on Christmas Day. On Christmas Eve we are. So on Christmas Day it'll be goose, and it'll be I think the idea is goose and a beautiful ham. Because we're just going to have a picky Christmas Day, because we've had the big dinner on Christmas Eve.
Oh, goose, that's so exciting.
I love goose, man.
Oh, I only feed 2, though, a goose.
I know, well, that's it, though, isn't it?
How many geese are you having?
2. 1. No, just 1, but with loads of stuffing and, like, all the bits.
We only have a slither.
Well, yeah, but it's rich. Sure, it'll be fine.
No, I'm traditional. Turkey, our cranberry port and kumquat sauce. Bread sauce, roast taters, mashed potatoes, all the veggies, pigs in blankets, the whack, loads of gravy, and then the family eat it under sufferance because they're the Romanian background, so they love everything on Christmas Eve. They're like, so my wife will do traditional Romanian fare. So we have a twofer, really. As long as they turn up on time, but I insist on that. With Christmas crackers.
Yes.
Oh, you've got to have Christmas crackers.
Yeah, I Christmas love the Christmas. Little prizes, even if they're rubbish. It's just fun, isn't it?
And the crappy jokes. 2 snowmen standing on a hill. One said, smell carrots.
He's remembered that from literally 30 years ago. It comes out every Christmas. And the mad thing about it is, I still laugh.
You're very generous.
It is kind of funny.
Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on Radio Times Podcast.
Thanks, Kellyanne.
Really
thank
brilliant.
You.
Thank you, Kellyanne. It's been an absolute pleasure.
If you enjoyed this episode, you might like to listen to my festive conversation with Jamie Oliver, or my chat with mother-daughter duo Andy and Nikita Oliver. Both can be found by scrolling back through the Radio Times Podcast feed. Thank you for listening to the Radio Times podcast with me, your host, Kellyanne Taylor. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please do follow, rate and review wherever you get your podcast from. It helps other TV and film lovers find us. Until next Tuesday, happy viewing.